waters and thy waves have rolled over me. The Lord will command his loving kindness in the daytime. And in this phrase especially, his song will be with me in the night. A prayer to the God of my life. David was a man of varied experiences. And God allowed that man to experience those many things so that we could learn how to sing in all the changing experiences of life. I have an idea that, in a way, perhaps more really in David's life than anyone, maybe Job is an exception, but David could write, "All thy breakers and all thy waves have gone over me, have rolled over my soul." Because he really went through it. And some of his experiences really show it. God gave him a song in all his experiences. That's how we got our song. The songs that grew out of those experiences. The series we're dealing with deal with 11 psalms. We don't know the exact experience of every psalm. Those songs grew out of some experience, but we don't know exactly what it was. But God has preserved for us 11 psalms. Psalms that are connected with a definite history. In other words, there's 11 psalms that have a heading. And that particular heading drives you back to either 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel, in one case, Chronicles, so that you can see the history. For example, Psalm 3, before you start the psalm, the heading. David wrote this when he was fleeing from Absalom, his son. Or Psalm 18, David wrote this after he had been delivered from all of his enemies, especially Saul. Or Psalm 34, David wrote this when he feigned madness before Abimelech, the king of Gad. Or Psalm 51, David wrote this after his conviction over his sin with Bathsheba, and so forth. There's 11 psalms that tell you the historical occasion. And if you look at the heading of the psalms, you'll find in your margin the historical reference. So you'll know it's very easy to trace the background. Now, the approach we've been following is this. We want to look at the history. We want to get the facts. We want to get the background. We want to get the history, the occasion for the psalm. But this is not a course on 1st and 2nd Samuel. We're not studying the history. Just so, we want to look at the psalm. We want to study the song, the music. What resulted from that history? But this is not a course on the psalm. So if you can, I don't know what to call it, but if you can figure out what to call it, we're not studying the history, we're not studying the psalm. But we're trying to study the kind of a song that comes out of a certain kind of an experience. That makes it a little bit difficult. What did David have to sing about in these different experiences of life? See, I might be called of God, or you might be called of God, to go through similar situations. The fact would change. Saul will never take you. But you might have a similar situation where you're being persecuted for some reason in the heart of your persecutor. David didn't do a thing to cause him to get that persecution. What kind of a song does God give in an experience like that? It's always God's will that his children sing. Now let me just review the four we've done, just by stating the general principle. And then we'll begin our new psalm this morning. Psalm 3, David was fleeing from Absalom. What does David have to sing about in Psalm 3? And the answer is, deliverance from past sin. Deliverance from past sin. He was presently suffering because of his own sin, what he had done in the past. The Absalom never should have been born, because that was a result of a polygamous relationship. And even after he was born and grown, he committed murder. And David was the king, and murder was a capital offense. He should have been killed. But David had pity on his own son and waived the capital punishment. And now David has to run because Absalom began a conspiracy of insurrection against David. Now David's suffering because of his own sin. And he has a song. He really sounds foolish and amazing. It's so full of it. And he just says, "Go 10,000 in camp against me, I'll not see." David has perfect victory over his past sin. Even though he was suffering the present results of his sin, he still was not a victim of his past. And at any moment in my life, God will give me a song over my past sin. I don't have to be a victim of my past. No Christian is ever a victim or at the mercy of past circumstances. And so we have a song. And then in Psalm 18, the Bible says this song was sung after David was delivered from all his enemies. And we suggested that the great principle is telescopic praise. In other words, all along the way, David said, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. But when it was all over, he looked back and said, thank you, Jesus, that the whole thing is over. And he just thanked God for a whole block of time. And I tried to illustrate the many ways that's applicable in our own lives. Psalm 34, when David feigned madness before Abimelech. What do you have to think about? He acted like a madman and spittle ran down his beard and he crawled up the wall. All of that to get away and to escape the hand of the enemy. In this Psalm 34, David praises God for undeserved deliverance. In other words, even when David acted like a fool, God delivered him anyway. Have you ever thought that in your own mind? Why do you think so foolish? I did the dumbest thing in the world, and God delivered me anyway. And that's how David was singing. He just said, God delivered me in spite of my foolish past. Psalm 51, that's what we closed with last time. This was a psalm written after David's conviction. Notice I didn't say after his sin with Bathsheba. Because this was a full year after that. This was after his conviction of his sin with Bathsheba. After Nathan came to him. Because there are a couple of psalms he wrote after his sin with Bathsheba. And there's a big difference in the two different kinds of psalms. But what was he singing about here? And the answer is complete restoration. Complete restoration. He fell as low as a man could fall. Because he fell from the high position of a king. He fell from the throne into the dust. And yet God gave him a full restoration. Wash me and I'll be whiter than snow. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a right spirit within me. You can always sing the song of complete restoration. So regardless of the experiences God allows, he always has a song. And it's God's will that his children always be singing, always be praising, always be adoring, in everything and for everything, giving thanks. And these songs just illustrate there's always a song. You know, sometimes we get into some kind of a situation, we feel like we're a rabbit trapped in a one-ended log with a hunting dog at one end and a hunter at the other end. And we just feel like there's nothing to say about it. But God tells us in the 11th Psalm, yes, there is. There's always something to say about it. This is going to be really illustrated this morning. We're going to look at two Psalms this morning. Psalm 57 and Psalm 142. You probably say, well, didn't you skip over a couple? Doesn't Psalm 52 give some historical reference? Doesn't Psalm 54 give some historical reference? Yes, it does. And I studied that. And God hasn't given me the particular principle connected with it. I don't know what it is. I'm going to continue to study it. I hope to study it through the summer. And I'm sure that the Lord will open the same thing. But I just can't get the connection between the history and the song. That doesn't mean it's not bad. It just means I'm a little bad, a little dull. And by and by, God will give it to me. But this morning, we're going to look at Psalm 57 and Psalm 142. You say, why two psalms? Because they have the identical heading. Psalm 57 says, when he fled from Saul in the cave. Psalm 142 says, when he was in the cave. And so both of these psalms were written when David was in the cave. You say, do we have a record of this? We have a couple of records. We're not exactly sure which one. You see, it might be the cave of Adullam. It doesn't say which cave. If it's the cave of Adullam, it's recorded in 1 Samuel 22. If it's the cave of En-Gedi, it's recorded in 1 Samuel 24. But you'll notice that not many days passed between the cave of Adullam and the cave of En-Gedi. Not very much time passed at all. So I'm not sure if God really cares which cave it was. I think that's why it's blank. Because it's the same song. When you're in a cave, it doesn't really matter what your geographical location is. You're in a cave and someone's after you. So I just blended together the two histories of the cave. just to get an overall view of what it's like to be in a cage. And what kind of song will God give when you're in a situation like that? Now let's just look at the introductory historical references. First Samuel chapter 22. If it's the cave of Adullam, these two verses are the only verses you have on it. 1 Samuel 22, 1 and 2. Now, another time David was in the cave of Adullam when he was hiding from the Philistines. But the reference says when he's hiding from Saul. So this is your only reference. So David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's household heard of it, so this is just outside of Bethlehem. I remember in another connection when he was hiding from the Philistines, he's in this cave. And he said, oh, if I only had water from the well of Bethlehem. And remember, his three mighty men went down and fought their way through the Philistines and brought the water back. So it's up next to Bethlehem. That's where his family lived. And so when his brothers and all his father's household heard of it, they went down there to him. Now watch this. This is a strange verse. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. He became captain over them. There were about 400 men with him. So when he went to the cave, many commentators point out that this is a great picture of the Lord Jesus. He had already been anointed king. He said, well, what a place for a king to be, in a cave. Just like the Lord Jesus is king. But he's rejected. And the only ones that gather near him are the rejected ones. And Jesus is just, David's a wonderful picture of the Lord. Here he is, the real king, but someone else is usurping the throne, Saul. And they're being persecuted, and all the persecuted just gather around David. And David has a whole band of persecuted men. Later on, we'll find out that all of those that gathered to him were not to be trusted. Some of them tried to turn him in and tried to get the ransom. And then look at chapter 24, the first three verses. And it came about when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men of Israel. Just imagine, later on David said to Saul, are you coming after me as one searches out a flea? 3,000 men after me? And went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. He came to the sheepfold on the way, and there was a cave. And Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. And you'll notice the margin there, to relieve himself, says to cover his feet. That's the term that was used when they went in to take a nap. He was just tired from chasing David. He just went in the cool of the cave and went to sleep. Is there a notable difference in the two songs that were sung, Psalm 57 and Psalm 142? Maybe so, but I don't see. It seems like it's the same thing in Psalm 57 as in 142. I submit that Psalm 142 describes more of David's personal feelings. But when you come to the theme of the song, it seems to be the same thing. Why then are there two songs? This might be an elementary answer, but I believe at least this much is true. Because the thing is so wonderful, he sang twice. And when you see this thing, it'll cause you to sing at least twice also. The tremendous theme that God gave David, he just began to sing. And then he sang again. So that's why I think there's two psalms. I'm not going to dwell on the difference between the two psalms, but more of the sameness. God did something for David that day in the cave that just made him sing twice. And I hope that it'll thrill your heart when you see what it is. He was just overflowing with song. I have a series of books. Really, they're classics. I got them at a real good sale. I paid 25 cents a piece for them. But I found out since then that they're a real masterpiece. Thompson, the land in the book. Almost all of those who have any kind of a library have Thompson's land in the book. Thompson made it his lifetime work to visit all the places in the Bible and then write about those particular places. And he describes what is believed to be the cave of Adullam. Now, even if it wasn't, there was a cave in that area. So his description fits some kind of a cave. I took the time to write out the quote. It's rather lengthy. But it sort of gives us a feeling. You know, we can be detached when we say, oh, David was in a cave and he wrote it down, blah, blah, blah. Try and get the feeling of what it means to be in a cave. All right, let me give you the quote from Thomas. Leaving our horses in charge of some Arabs and taking one for our guide, we started for the cave, which is believed to be the cave Adullam. Having a fearful gorge below and gigantic cliffs above, and the path winding along a narrow shelf on the rock, at length, from a great rock hanging on the edge of the shelf, we entered by a long leap into a low window which opened into the perpendicular face of the cliff. We were then within the traditional hold of David, the cave of Adullam, and creeping half double through the narrow crevice, for we could not stand up. We did this for a few rods, and then we stood beneath the dark vault of the first grand chamber of this mysterious and oppressive cavern. Our whole collection of light did a little bit more than make that damp darkness visible. That's just an illustration. They say that some of the inside of those caves can hold 5,000 men. That's how big they are. But you have to crawl in. And later on, Thompson makes the comment, he doesn't think any army could have ever tried to get David out of that cave. They just couldn't do it. And it was a real safe hold, stronghold. Sometimes we don't put ourselves into David's shoes. He was in a deep, dark hole. And he was there because he was escaping for his life. For a time, he had the rejected with him. We read that in chapter 22. But he didn't know who he could trust. He'd been betrayed many times. In order to get this meaningfully before you, let me describe the outward circumstance. First of all, you get that from the history, and some of the Psalms refer to the outward circumstance. Having done that, let me describe for you David's inward circumstance, how he felt about those outward circumstances. What was his emotional situation? What was his character like at that time? What was he thinking about? How did he feel? Was he discouraged? Was he depressed? What was his emotional situation? And then I'll give you, in the light of the outward circumstances and the inward feelings, the theme of the song. And I hope, putting it all together, it'll be a blessing to your heart. All right, let's look at the outward circumstance. First from the history, then from the Psalms. A great change had come since David was the human hero in Saul's eyes, having killed Goliath, the king of Philistines. 1 Samuel 18. Let's look at, get a little background here. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 6 through 9. This is where Saul began to dislike David. And it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistines, that's Goliath, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet Saul with tambourines, with joy and musical instruments. And the women sang as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000. Then Saul became very angry for this saying, displeased him. And he said, they've ascribed to David 10,000, but to me they've ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the king? Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. That's where it all began, in his jealousy. He got more credit than Saul did. Verses 10 and 11 show how quickly that jealousy turned into hate. It came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand as usual. And the spear was in Saul's hand. And Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I'll pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. Evidently, the first time he escaped, he hid behind the table or something. And then, a little while later, he found him and he escaped the second time. Verse 25. Saul then said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry except 100 foreskins of the Philistines, to take vengeance on the king's enemies. Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. David was to find out that this scheme that was used on him, he was going to use it on Uriah. Saul put him in the front line, hoping that he'd be killed. And then verse 29 says, Saul was even more afraid of David when he escaped that situation. Thus Saul was David's enemy continually. Then in chapter 19, 9 and 10, there was an evil spirit from the Lord on Saul as he was sitting in the house with his spear in his hand. David was playing the harp with his hand, and Saul tried to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence so that he struck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. Again, Saul tries to kill David. In chapter 19, 11 through 17, I won't read it, I'll just tell the story. If it wasn't for Michelle, David's wife, David would have been murdered in his bed. But she warned him, she heard about the plot, and they put a dummy in the bed instead. And the men went up there and tried to kill David, and of course there was only the dummy in the bed. And Saul got very angry with his daughter because she helped David escape out of the wall. I won't look at all the references, but that's just to give you the feeling. Saul hated David. From there, David went to Ramah, and from there to Nea, and then from there back to Bethlehem. That's chapter 20, verses 30 through 33, describes his time at Bethlehem. Saul then returned against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know you're choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame, to the shame of your mother's nakedness? As long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die." And that was Saul's attitude. He's going to die. From there David ran to Nob, where he was discovered, and because of his discovery, 85 priests lost their lives. And a whole city, men, women, children, and animals, were killed just because they helped David. And from there, you know, we can just sort of read this, la la la. This took 10 years out of his life. For 10 years, his full-time employment was running. He was a fugitive. He had nothing else to do but escape the hand of Saul. Saul became a madman. He became so impressed with his passion to get David that he stopped all the war, and he was at a big war with the Philistines, and he called off the war, called his whole army back, and said, "Go get David, one man." And the whole army of Israel went after one man, and that lasted for 2 years, where the whole army was just after one man. Now later on David described it as searching out a flea, because he was just all by himself. And he said, "Have you come to partridge on the rock?" The whole army after one man? But he was just so mad with that hatred. 1 Samuel 22:1, David goes back to the cave of Adullam. But he doesn't stay there long. From there he goes to Mizpah. From there to Keilah. And then in verse 13 of chapter 23, it says, "And David and his men, about 600 now, before it was 400, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go." Now, it wasn't even a special place. They just had to scatter. And they went wherever they could go. Every place David went, he found enemies. Verse 15, or chapter 23, yeah, verse 15. David became aware that Saul had come out to seek his life while David was in the wilderness of Ziph. And so he goes to the wilderness of Ziph. And look at verse 19. "The Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, 'Is David not hiding with us in the stronghold of the forest on the hill of Hakilah, which is on the south of Jeshmon?'" They didn't care if innocent blood was shed as long as they earned that graceless monarch smile. This was gross inhospitality. These Ziphites, they didn't even know David. But every place he went, everybody was warned. If you befriend them, you'll die. If anyone hides it, the whole city's going to be burned up. And he did it. This madman went burning up city after city because people helped. So everybody was saying, there he is, there he is. And every place he went, everybody was turning him in. And even these Ziphites did the same thing. And so David then flees to the wilderness of Moab. He was almost captured that time. Chapter 23, verse 26. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were surrounding David and his men to seize them. But a messenger came to Saul saying, hurry and come, the Philistines have made a raid on the land. And so Saul returned from pursuing David. Went to meet the Philistines. Therefore they call that place the Rock of Escape. That was a close call. They were surrounded. Almost captured. And can you just see the providence of God? They get a word that the Philistines just attacked. So they say, well, we better go break that up. So they left David. But try to get this. 10 years of David's life, he did nothing but run from Saul. See, and that's the background of this psalm. Then in chapter 23, verse 29, David went up from there and stayed in the stronghold of En-Gedi. I believe that introduces us to our psalm. It was while he was in the cave at En-Gedi that he penned the words of Psalm 57, of Psalm 142. I take the time to show you all of that because I want you to catch the wonder of this experience. Could any outward circumstances be worse? Talk about outward circumstances. David had no place to turn. Listen as he describes in his psalm. Turn to Psalm 57. We're still looking at the outward circumstances. He's describing them. Verse 4. My soul is among lions. And really it was. He was howled at and funded. The Hebrew for this word lion is not really lion. It's lionesses. It's plural and it's feminine. And it's the word that's used when they describe a lioness giving suck to the young. And at that particular time, they are peculiarly fierce and dangerous. And this is the word that's used. And in verse 4, I must lie among those who bring forth fire. He couldn't even trust his own men. In that same verse, he describes their teeth as spears and arrows, and their tongues as sharp swords. Every place he turned, somebody was turning them in. In verse 6, it says, they set a net for my steps. This might be figurative language, or it might be literal. It was the custom in those days, since they didn't have firearms, to use snares and nets and sticks, holes in the ground, in order to capture wild animals or men. And they used them on men. And I have an idea it was more than figurative. I think David was saying, there's nobody I can trust. And not only that, even when I'm running, I have to watch every step to make sure I don't fall in a hole, that some tree doesn't come down on me, somebody's rope doesn't grab me, some big trap doesn't snap on my foot. They not only were hunting him with the whole army, but they had animal traps set all over the forest for him. Thank you. Psalm 142, which is the same background. He wrote this in the cave. Verse 3. They have hidden a trap for me. Verse 4. Look to the right and see. There is no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. He was all alone. I thought to visualize this series of circumstances. Running for 10 years, death at every corner. They say, fear of death is an awful thing, especially if it's unexpected death. The unexpected is terrible. You know, if someone was standing there with a gun on me, I have an idea. Maybe I could, I know that the Lord would give grace and all that. I'm not talking about that, but I'm just talking about my own natural heart. If someone, if I could see them, I think I could be more courageous. But if I had to walk in a dark room, not knowing who's there, I'd be more afraid someone would step out from behind the door and go, boo, than someone with a gun or a knife. Because you just don't know. And that's how David lived for 10 years. He had no idea who his friends were. He had no idea who's hiding behind the next tree. He had no idea where the traps were. How soon Saul was going to come. Every moment was a moment of death. One moment he's playing a harp. Imagine the spirit when you're playing a harp. You sit down with a musical instrument. And the next moment, a spear is shivering in the wall in front of his eyes. This is the kind of a life he lived. Try to get a feel for these circumstances. Then he ends up hunted, tired, exhausted, afraid. He's lost his wife already. Lost his children. Lost his home. Been exiled. Fugitive for 10 years. And to top it all off, he didn't do anything wrong. There was not one reason to cause all this. It just happened to him. Everything went wrong. That's why I say for our key verse, that verse we quoted in the beginning, Psalm 142, all my waves have gone over my head. All my breakers have rolled over me. Surely they did to David. All this on the innocent. Now without reading any more, let me just ask you a question. What was he saying about? In that situation, if God had called you to that, oh, I got a hymn coming. What were you singing about? See, in order to understand this psalm, you have to understand it. But let me get a little deeper. See, we've only scratched the surface because we only looked at the outward surface. What about his emotional situation, his mental attitude? How did he respond to all of this running and all this hiding and all of this precarious position that he was in, constantly in danger for his life? How were his spirit? I guess the best way to get it before you is to describe it in his own words. We'll be looking in Psalm 142. I'll just quote Psalm 57:6. You don't need to come to it. Psalm 57:6 just says, my soul is bowed down. Now we're not dead sure what he means by my soul is bowed down. But Psalm 142, which describes the same scene, gives us a little insight. Look at Psalm 142, verse 3. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me. That's a tremendous expression. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me. Literally, that means when my soul was wrapped up in darkness. One translator puts it this way, muffled with gloom. How did David feel about all this? How was his spirit? It was overwhelmed. It was muffled with gloom. He was smothered in darkness. That's the picture that he used. Proverbs 15:13 says, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. But when the heart is sad, the spirit's broken. Broken spirit. And Proverbs 17:22 says, a broken spirit dries up the bones. Man may put up with an awful lot of outward adverse circumstances. You've got a lot of spirit. You can take an awful lot. You can just grin and bear it and pull in the belt and tighten up and keep a stiff chin and all that kind of thing. But there comes a time when your spirit breaks. All the outward circumstances, and then finally your spirit's overwhelmed. That's what it is. Not only all these outward circumstances, but his bones dried up. His spirit was overwhelmed by these awful spirits. Look at Psalm 142, verse 4. There's no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. You say, well, that's not true. It's true to David. The Bible says that he had certain men that were true blue. They stuck with him. But he was in such a situation that that wasn't true in his heart. He just said, I'm all alone. Nobody cares for my soul. There's no escape. Try to enter into this. That's how he felt. Utterly forsaken. Utterly alone. Totally depressed. What's it? Can you read this and say, oh, Christians should never get discouraged. Christians should never be down. Was David down in the dumps when he was in the cave of Adullam, in the cave of Engedi? Well, I tell you, he was. When I read some of his background, then I ask the question, what did he have to sing about? Outward circumstances couldn't be worse. And his own spirit was broken. It was overwhelmed within him. In chapter 142, verse 7, he prayed, bring my soul out of prison. That's how he felt mentally. He was in prison in his soul. I doubt seriously if the average Christian has ever felt like David felt that day. Sitting there in the cave, alone and broken and afraid and utterly forsaken, depressed, overwhelmed in his spirit. I know sometimes things get bad in my own life, or I'm sure in your life. Situations, circumstances get bad. But this time, try to enter into that. He was really going through. Well, I used enough black things. I wanted you to see this awful situation. His outward circumstances couldn't be worse, and I have an idea. His emotional circumstances couldn't be worse. He was as low as a man could get. In Psalm 119, there's a verse that says, my soul has licked the dust. I think that's what he was. Talking about being down in the dust. His soul has licked the dust. Alright? Let's ask the question. Look at the time. What did David sing about? He said, in every situation there's a song. What kind of a song does God give when outward circumstances penetrate into your emotional situation so that your spirit is broken and your bones dry up, and it's at the place where you throw in the towel, where you give up, where you say, there's no escape for myself. It's all over. I'm all alone. I quit. I give up. What kind of a song does God give? Something a lot deeper than adverse circumstances. So we can preach all along. Don't want the circumstances. Okay. If your spirit's been broken. But what happened when your spirit's overwhelmed with him? That's what David did. Way down deep in David's heart. You have the outward circumstances, you have the inward mental condition. But there's something deeper than that. And way down deep in the heart of David's heart, in the spirit of his spirit, God began to stir the chord and write a song. David had a thing. To get it before you, I'm going to ask you to turn back to the history. 1 Samuel 24. With the description we've already had, try to enter into this. At this point, David has 400 men. And he has gone inside the cave. Verse 1, and it came about when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, saying, behold, David's in the wilderness of Engedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. He came to the sheepfolds on the way where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. Now picture that. He finally runs into the cave, the 400 men with him, and he goes, all of a sudden there's the sound of noise, rustling, and he looked out, and who is coming, because he's in the dark in the back, and you can see in the light, who comes in the cave but Saul, in the very cave in which he's hiding. So what do you think about? Look at the next verse. And don't forget, he didn't come alone. He had 3,000 men outside the cave. Amazing. The men of David said to him, behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I'm about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you. So David, Saul went to sleep.
David arose and cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. It came about afterward that David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the edge of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "Far be it from me, because of the Lord, that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, since he's the Lord's anointed." And David persuaded his men with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul. Saul arose, left the cave, and went on his way. Real irony here in verses 4 through 7. It's an important principle of guidance. Let me mention that in passing. It's not really connected, but it's too good to pass up. Circumstances are not a safe rule of guidance. Sometimes you say, "Well, the circumstances, the Lord guided me because the circumstances were right." We talk about God opening the door and God closing the door. We mean circumstances. Circumstances by themselves are not a safe guide. Don't follow circumstances. Satan can control circumstances. You see, Jonah could have said, "This is God's will. Suppose that I got the right change in my pocket," and he's just leaving. Circumstances were fine. Now, wouldn't you have agreed with David's men in verse 4? "Wow, the Lord delivered Saul into your hand. Your enemy's right there sleeping, right in front of you. He doesn't even know you're here." Circumstances sure look like that. But David didn't do it. Later on in chapter 26, he let Saul escape again. He had the same opportunity. God caused a deep sleep to fall on the whole army. He walked right up, stole his spear that was in his hand and a cruise of water that was in it, and let him escape again. So don't trust circumstance. If ever it looked like an open door, it looked like this was an open door. But David says, "I'm going to let God take care of it, not me." And he refused to be guided by circumstance. What's the thing that impressed David to sing twice in this cave? Now, it's true that his song poured out his troubles to the Lord, but it's deeper than that. I want to ask you to turn to Psalm 57 again. Now, let me tell you the sequel to that little story that you didn't read on the head. Saul went out a little bit ahead, and David came out to the edge of the cave with the garment in his hand. He held it up, and he called to Saul. Saul turned around and saw David standing there. Of course, his army was there. His thousands of men were there. David holds up the gun. He says, "God delivered you into my hand. I could have killed you. But I want to show you that there's no evil intent in my heart." And then he said to Saul, "The Lord will judge you when you live. I'm not going to judge you. If God wants you to die, he's going to save you some way. Maybe a tree will fall on you. Maybe you'll have a heart attack. Maybe you'll die in battle. But I'll never raise my hand against you." And David turned around and went back into the cave. And Saul gave a good confession. It didn't last very long. But he said, "You're more righteous than I am, and I won't try to kill you anymore." So we make sense. All right, Psalm 57, verse 6. This is the thing, I think, that so impressed David. This is the thing that started a song in his heart. "They've prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They dug a pit before me. They themselves have fallen into the midst of it, Selah." And the word Selah means, think about that. Or rest. Isn't this an amazing thing? "They dug a pit for me, and they fell into it themselves." I think David was singing about something like this. Saul was hunting David, and David kept catching Saul. Try to figure that out. Saul kept chasing him in order to trap him. And Saul was running into the very face of that which he was trying to avoid. David always ended up on top. And David didn't do anything. And I think David is singing about the sovereignty of God. That's what I think. He's got a song. That God's in charge. Two times in verses 5 and 11, he says, "Be exalted above the heavens, O God. Let thy glory be above all the earth." I believe he sat at the cave's mouth and viewed with wonder and awe the just retaliations of the providence of God. David over and over again called the Lord his rock. This is an amazing thing. David was hiding in the rock, but he was also hiding in the rock. You know what I mean? He was hiding in the rock. His real security was not the cave of Engedi. You look at Psalm 57, verse 1. Be gracious to me, O God, be gracious to me. My soul takes refuge in the cave of Engedi. Isn't what he said? My soul takes refuge in me. In the shadow of the rocks of Adullam will I take refuge. No. In the shadow of thy wings. He was in the rock of Adullam. He was in the rock of Engedi. But he was also in the rock of Ages. Isn't this an amazing thing? Verse 7. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. The Hebrew there is fixed or anchored. My heart is anchored. Calm, firm, happy, resolute, established, rest. Even though his spirit was broken. Even though he was in an emotional turmoil. He was a mess. Yet he had something to sing about it, the sovereignty of the Lord. In spite of the way he felt down in the dark, it's not a sin to feel down in the dark. Feeling, you don't ever look to your feelings. It's not a sin to be discouraged, to feel discouraged. Someone asked Spurgeon one time if he didn't ever get down in the dumps. And he said, yes, my soul often gets down in the dumps, but my spirit never follows my soul. See what he said? My soul often gets down in the dumps, but my spirit never follows my soul. In spite of circumstances, in spite of a trembling heart, David could say, my heart is safe. God's in charge of all of this. God's the one in control. They made a trap for me. And they made nothing. Because God is working that. And David sang of the sovereignty of the Lord. Those first three verses just illustrate how he was trusting. Verse 2, to God who accomplishes all things for me, he'll send from heaven, he'll save me. David absolutely refused to deal with his own enemies, even when he had the opportunity to do it. Well, there's a great lesson in that for us. Don't deal with your enemies. Even if it looks like God has put your enemies right in your hands, let God deal with your own enemies. Don't try to deal with your own problems, even if it looks like you have the solution. Turn it over to the Lord. By way of application, let me just say this. I don't mean in a hard, cold, detached way when I say I don't care. Because I do care. I don't mean it that way. But it doesn't matter. I don't care what your outward circumstances are. It doesn't matter what they are. And it doesn't even matter how you feel if you're discouraged about it. The fact is, God's exalted above the heavens. God's still sovereign. God's still in charge. In verse 3, he said, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, thou didst know my path. See, there's the point. He said, even though my spirit is overwhelmed, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know the next step to take. Thou dost know my path. God knows his path. David didn't know it, but God knew it. Your resting place is never that you know what's going on. Your resting place is always that God knows what's going on. God knows your path. To say God's above the heavens. Well, boy, I wouldn't have prayed that. That would have made him seem far away off. God at a distance. But no, he said, he knows my path. God has never withdrawn a great distance from his children. His eyes are always upon you, and he's not watching with the indifference of a spectator either. God is watching you with great attention. Every hair of your head is numbered. He thinks about you more than the sands that are on the earth. You know why he sees your path? He sees your path because he appointed your path. He planned it that way. Every circumstance that comes into the believer's life is under God's control. Everything that comes into your life has already been sifted through the loving hand of a Father who has an infinite love for you. I said this before, but I don't know another way to say it except to repeat. If we had the knowledge of God at our disposal, I speak of the fool, we don't know what he knows. But if we did know what he knows, and we were called upon to choose a path for our life, we wouldn't change a thing. The path that we're going in is the best. Now, in a moment of time, God has eternally considered every possibility and weeded out everything except the best. And what takes place in our life, I don't care how adverse it seems, is the best. The best thing could have ever happened to David was that Saul faced him for 10 years. And he ended up writing the psalm that would produce from that experience. Every circumstance is under his direction and control. God saw his trouble, the hour is the end. And the duration of that situation, he's marked it out to the very second. He won't let it go longer than the appointed time. If I were to summarize the great picture, the great principle of these two signs, it would be in these words. Don't look at your circumstance. But we've often seen that thing. Don't even look at your emotion or your understanding of your circumstance. Doesn't matter how discouraged you are. Don't look at your circumstances out there. Don't look in here. How you feel about it. How discouraged you are. Look to the Lord. Take refuge in Him. Hide under the shelter of His wings. Cry to the Most High. Say, my heart is fixed, O God. Anchored on the Lord. Fixed on Him. David sang of the sovereignty of God, of His presence. He sang by faith. He wasn't really delivered here. But he was just rejoicing. How many times they got a fit and they fell in the very hole that they dug. How God had turned things around. How God continually delivered him. How he was close, but it never touched him. How God was minutely controlling every circumstance. So that the spear was right in front of his eyes. So that his enemy was camping in the very cave in which he was hiding. But it never touched him. He came close, but it never touched him. And he was praising God for the deliverance that was yet to come. A new song is in my mouth, the long-lost music set. Glory to God for all the grace I have not tasted yet. That's what David is saying. Outwardly, he was in a prison. Even inwardly, he was in a prison. But at a depth which no man can plumb, where spirit touches spirit, his heart was free, because he was resting in the Lord his God. Real faith penetrates emotion, reason, circumstance, and it looks unto the Lord himself. This psalm, if you read it, you'll find out that there's three great movements. It seems to begin in the darkness of the cave. And as you move on in the psalm, he seems to be getting towards the opening, towards the entrance of the cave, and things begin to get a little lighter. And when the psalm ends up, verse 7, my heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast, I'll sing, yes, I'll sing praises. Awake my glory, awake harp and lyre, I'll awaken the dawn. I'll give thanks to thee, O Lord, among the people. I'll sing praises to thee among the nations. Thy loving kindness is grace to the heaven, thy truth to the clouds. The psalm ends with David singing in full strength in the sweet, fresh air outside the cave, with his eyes penetrating the clouds, looking through the heavens unto the Lord himself. Your body, outwardly, might be in a cave. And even your spirit might be in a cave. But your spirit of spirit, way down deep, you can be free. Let me close with these words from a poem I read. Madame Guyon wrote these many years ago. It describes outwardly pressured on, locked into a cave. Even inwardly, but inwardly, my spirit is free. A little bird I am, shut from the fields of air. And in my cage I sit and sing to him who placed me there. Well pleased his prisoner to be, because my God that pleases thee. Nor have I else to do, just sing the whole day long. And he whom most I love to please just listens to my song. He caught and bound my wandering wings, now he bends to hear me sing. Thou hast an ear to hear, a heart to love and bless. And though my notes are e'er so rude, thou wouldst not hear the less. Because thou knowest as they fall, his God, his love, inspires them all. The cage confines me around. Abroad I cannot fly. And though my wing is closely bound, my heart that lives, the prison walls cannot control the flight the signal. That's why he was rejoicing. Didn't matter about out there. Didn't even matter about in here. God's in control. Nothing can happen unless God saves us. Everything needs God's control. And he found a reason to sin. You always find a reason to sin. And the sovereignty of God is always the same. Comment or question?
Our Father, we just rejoice in Psalm 57 and Psalm 142. Or sometime in prosperity, we're not able to say, my heart is fixed, my heart is steadfast. But thou hast shown us that even in the most adverse situation, even when our spirit's overwhelmed within us and our soul is bowed down, and no one cares for our soul and we're all alone, even then we might awake our instruments and awake our voice and have reason to sing and praise thee. Because thou hast ordained our steps and thou hast planned it all. And nothing can happen in our lives unless you're in charge. Deliver us from trying to make our own escape. Thank you that you're in charge and we're going to do it all. Teach us the song of thy sovereignty. Thou art exalted above the heavens. In Jesus' name.